Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I was joined by Jane Jackson and Anthony Sider. Jane founded the Bristol Grandparents Support Group in 2007 when she lost contact with her own granddaughter after her son's divorce. The support group aims to inform people of the issues surrounding grandparents and their rights to see their grandchildren if they become estranged. Jane told me that she thought being stopped from seeing her granddaughter was an issue that just she faced, but in fact, one in seven grandparents face similar issues for a whole host of reasons. Jane started the support group after writing to her local paper and now holds bi-monthly meetings remotely to help grandparents from all over the UK deal with estrangement. Anthony is a divorce specialist at Amicable and has worked in the area of divorce, mediation and family dispute resolution for the past 8 years. His areas of interest include the voice of the child and diverse and inclusive families. This episode is all about the role of grandparents during parental separation. We look at what can happen during an acrimonious separation when grandparents may lose touch with their grandchildren and amicable ways of restarting or maintaining a grandparents' relationship. This episode highlights the importance of grandparents in children's lives, especially when their worlds are disrupted by parental separation. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. Welcome, Anthony, and welcome, Jane. It's lovely to see you both. Now, as I said in the intro, we're here to talk today about the important relationship between grandparents and grandchildren and some of the things that can happen when a divorce happens in a family or a separation and you lose contact. So I'd like to invite you, Jane, just to kick off by just telling us a little bit about what it's like to be a grandparent.
Gosh. Okay, so nobody knows what it's like to be a grandparent until it happens to you. It's magical. It's an enormous privilege. There is something very strange about holding your own adult child's child in your arms. That seems, there's no words to describe it, actually. All I can say is the first time that the granddaughter I am or was estranged from is my eldest and first grandchild. And so when I first held her in my arms, I suppose all I can say is actually I just fell in love with her, and it was a shock, a real shock. I wasn't expecting it at all. And to have this wonderful little bundle of new life in my arms, looking up at me with huge blue eyes, full of expectation, was something I had never experienced before. And it's nothing like when you hold your own baby. It's totally different. And as I say, an enormous privilege.
So Jane, it sounds like it's a wonderful relationship. So just tell us a little bit about what happened in your circumstances. So you've had this grandchild, she's the apple of your eye, you've fallen in love. What happened then to change that relationship?
My son's relationship with his wife became somewhat fractured, and our granddaughter was in our lives for the first 7 years of her life, and she lives on the other side of the country from us, and so a long way away. But she would come and spend holidays with us, and at that time my son had actually separated from his wife, so she would come to us and come to him as well and spend holidays with us, and we had wonderful times, wonderful memories, wonderful laughter, and a wonderful relationship. And before the estrangement happened, the last visit was at Easter, actually, and we'd had Easter egg hunts in the garden. I got a little summer house at the bottom of my garden, which she loved, and she sat there for hours looking at Easter eggs, looking for Easter bunnies, and all the things you would expect, really. And completely randomly, at the age of seven, she suddenly said, "I've been told to dump my family in Bristol." And that was the beginning and the end. And actually, after that visit was the last time we saw her. for 11 years. And equally, my son didn't see his daughter either for 11 years. So it wasn't just us, it was him as well. I mean, the devastation that you feel is just, we call it a living bereavement. And that explains it quite well, really. And what happens is you're mourning somebody, but somebody who's still alive. And often what happens is there's no communication. So you absolutely don't know why this has happened. And often, you know, grandparents will say this will go on for years and years and still nobody is saying what has happened. So the devastation is very real and just so traumatic.
It sounds really traumatic and really upsetting. Anthony, what rights do grandparents have in those sort of circumstances as Jane has described?
Yeah, it's really difficult because it's not the same as the rights of a parent who has parental responsibility and legal guardianship. There are situations where a grandparent can apply for a childcare arrangements order to get those arrangements in place, but you have to request for that application to be heard. It's not particularly straightforward.
So it's not an automatic right. So grandparents don't have any automatic rights by the sounds of it. And Jane, how did you discover this? So presumably, you know, when you had stopped seeing your grandchild, I imagine you must have sort of gone into overdrive doing lots of research. What did you find out? What was it, a surprise to you that you didn't have any rights?
Yes. And I think, you know, you said at the beginning as well that you think this has just happened to you, that it's never happened to anybody else. And so, yes, I did lots of research. There was very little at that time. We're talking nearly 17, 18 years ago. Now, there was very little out there. And I suppose having gone through the initial shock of that loss and grief, I then went into a slightly different frame of mind where I thought I've got an option, I can sink or swim. And I decided to swim. And I realized by doing research that actually I don't think I was alone. You know, I was seeing statistics, not necessarily proven statistics, but statistics nevertheless that were actually saying this is happening to other people. So it occurred to me that I couldn't be the only person in Bristol that this was happening to. And so I wanted to talk to somebody else who was going through the same thing, really. And so I randomly wrote to my local press and to their letters page, explained that I was being denied contact with my grandchild. Was there anybody else out there who was going through the same thing? If they were, it'd be great to share a cup of tea and a piece of cake. And to my astonishment, seven grandparents turned up on my doorstep at a date that I'd given. And I was astonished, actually. And it became completely, you know, they all had the same story to tell. Clearly, every case is unique, but there's a pattern. And all these people who I'd never met before were sitting in my back room discussing their huge loss they were feeling and that, you know, the huge void that was in their life. And that really was the beginning of Bristol Grandparent Support. And since then, I've been contacted by over 9,000 grandparents. So, you know, and actually you also gave the statistic just now about one in seven grandparents. And there's an estimate that there's 14 million grandparents in the United Kingdom. And if you work that out, that's about 2 million people. Children included, actually, who are estranged from their family. It's massive. It is an absolutely enormous problem. And you touched with Anthony just now about the legal side of stuff. And I have to be honest and say I never advise a grandparent to go down the legal route. It's the only resort they have in some cases, but they need to really get huge information before they go down that route. It's adversarial. You know, the language we use within the family court is not great. We talk about fighting for children, all that sort of stuff. So it isn't the place. But at the moment, that is the only recourse some grandparents have. I don't have the statistics at how successful grandparents are. Some grandparents will say they have had a success, but that success may well be indirect contact. So they're allowed to send a birthday card or a Christmas card or a letter once a month. I'm not sure personally whether I see that as a success, but that's a personal thing. And if a grandparent wants to go down the legal route, we will support them in that. Of course we will. But it's not something that I would ever push.
Anthony, then what do you think the better options are for grandparents? So Jane explained there very movingly that, you know, after losing contact, there's a bereavement and the court isn't necessarily the right place to try and get any comfort or to try and move things on. As she mentions, it's very adversarial. It can be very expensive, of course, as well. And it might lead to an outcome that, as you say, Jane, doesn't really feel like a success, but might technically be, you know, a win kind of thing. So what are better options if you find yourself in this situation?
Yeah, I think that is completely right. And with what Jane was saying around it being an adversarial process, that doesn't help to repair or restore relationships to a point where that connection with the child can be rebuilt. And I think it's also really important to focus on the child that's at the centre of all of this and their relationships and the impact that this is having on them. So certainly trying to resolve this outside of a court process is always the way to go, whether that is sort of informally through trying to make some initial contact through other sort of family members or friends, whether it's through a process like mediation or through coaching sessions. There are other ways to try and start that communication up, but I think it's that direct communication to try and find a pathway through that has the best chance of leading to a truly successful outcome. You don't get that opportunity through a court process of having that direct communication.
Yeah, you're right. It's the difference between, you know, being able to tick a box to say you've got this level of contact or you can see on this visit versus actually having that relationship. And it sounds like to me, Jane, that was what you were saying, that the important thing is the quality of the relationship, not what it's defined as, whether that's indirect or direct contact, but it's the person that you're missing, isn't it? And the freedom to have a relationship with your granddaughter in your case.
Yes. And the fundamental, most important thing in all of this is the children. You know, I'm very much, if you like, not from the grandparents' rights side, really. I'm about the grandchildren and the effect it has on those children. And I know from my personal experience now how 11 years of separation is so lifelong damaging. And although we are reunited now, it's tenuous. You know, it's very, very difficult. I remember my son saying to me, "How do I become a dad to somebody who I've not seen for 11 years? And the same applies as a grandparent. You know, as parents, we build up our bond and relationship with our children on an hour-to-hour basis. So if you take a whole chunk of that life away, you're actually meeting a total stranger. And so you have to be led by the children completely and actually listen to what they are saying and put them at the forefront of everything because they are the most important people within this scenario.
Anthony, what are the benefits of having those wider relationships? So beyond just mum or dad and with, you know, extended family members, what does it bring for a child?
Yeah, they're incredibly important. I mean, I think that one of the most important things for children whose parents are going through a separation or a divorce is providing as much stability and continuity as possible. And so particularly where grandparents have had a really active role in these children's lives, trying to keep that, you know, as stable as possible is incredibly helpful. And that was my personal experience when my parents separated, and it was a very difficult separation, and the contact and communication between them wasn't great. But luckily for me, one thing that did remain consistent was the time that I spent with my grandparents and my relationship with them. And for me personally, that time with them, with grandparents on both sides, on my mum's side and my dad's side, as well as great uncles and aunties, I spent a lot of time in a lot of different houses growing up. And for me, those were my safe places. That was where I didn't have to worry about the conflict between my parents. It wasn't mentioned. It was always focused on, you know, doing all the fun things that you do with grandparents. And so I think that those relationships are, you know, probably one of the most important aspects for a child that's already going through so much change.
Yeah, it's a real place of stability, as you say, or it can be, can't it? So it's really important if children have got an established relationship to try and keep that going. And I guess also, even if there isn't an established relationship, to see it as an opportunity to create another positive adult bond. I always think you can't have too many people love your children, can you? It's one of those things. It's fine to share because there's that sort of very hackneyed phrase, it takes a village to raise children. So it's bringing a different lens of to look through life, isn't it? It's bringing a different set of contexts. You're bringing experience of an age where the children haven't actually lived in, and you're being able to tell them the stories of where they've come from and the things that you did with their parent as well, which I think that's one of the most lovely things, isn't it? In that grandparent relationship where you can talk about, oh, your mummy used to do that, or your daddy used to say this, or whatever. I think that's such a lovely way of cementing that real family space. And as you say, Anthony, right when from a child's perspective, everything's being thrown up in the air, to have that bond and to have that safe space feels really important. Jane, this is going to be a bit of a horrible question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you could say something to your son and daughter-in-law in terms of what happened at the beginning of their separation, if you could go back in time and give them a piece of advice that would somehow help to strengthen their ability to co-parent and to maintain those relationships, what kinds of things would you want to be able to say to them?
Oh, I mean, I think, of course, when a situation like this happens, it's for a grandparent, they have to try and be neutral. And that's quite hard, clearly. But again, it gets back to the same thing about putting the children first. The conflict between the adults is nothing to do with the child at all. And it's about any separating couple to understand that they need to put the priority of the child's feelings paramount in all discussions, actually. It's very difficult because, as you know, Anthony says as well, you know, separation, breakdown of any sort is so traumatic for everybody involved, and it's so difficult. But I think if as a grandparent, if you can be that steadying ship in this traumatic event that is happening to all children when their parents are going through separation and divorce, that's what our role should be. It's imperative that you don't take sides. But it's very easy for me to sit here and say that.
But it's also very hard because ultimately it's your child, isn't it? So in this case, your son that's going through something.
Of course.
And it must be very tempting to want to defend him, protect him, and to further his case. But I think it's really interesting what you say about, as a grandparent, you have this amazing opportunity to be a neutral force for good and to be almost to help the voice of, in this case, your granddaughter.
Children should not be made to make a choice, you know, in any way. I mean, my parents separated when I was 15. And so I also I've been an estranged child myself for 15 years from my father. So I can see it from both sides too. It is a huge, huge, huge issue for so many millions of people who are affected with family breakdown.
And Anthony, what sort of advice do you have for like grandparents if you're facing that situation as Jane has described, where you are estranged from your grandchild? What, and as Jane says, you don't want to go down this kind of antagonistic and what could be seen as quite an aggressive move of taking legal action. What would you recommend? What could people do in that scenario?
I think initially, just trying to make any form of contact and to reach out in any way. And I know that probably sounds easier said than done, but it's not necessarily about getting things exactly back to where they were or getting 100% of the way there in one step. It may be small steps to start building up that relationship. If they've had a breakdown in their relationship with your child, for example, and so you are the grandparent of the other parent, it may be about building up some trust and connection with them a bit more directly, separately from your child, to try and get that contact back on track. And that might start out small. It might be just, you know, watching the child maybe at their place or, you know, a few video calls or something like that. But any step is a step in the right direction. And I think sometimes it can understandably feel incredibly frustrating particularly if you're used to having a lot of contact and a lot of connection with your grandchild and it all of a sudden goes to zero, it can feel very frustrating to take those small steps. But I still think it's better than a court process.
Yeah, so it sounds like patience is the key thing here, being prepared to build up and not have the expectation that you'll go immediately back to where you've been and where you started from, but understanding that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time what connects with that as well is that there has been a relationship breakdown for whatever reason. And so the parents in that situation, they're going through a lot of things as well. They might not know who to trust. They might not know how to go about this themselves and don't know what the best option is. And it's that approach of, I'm trying to work with you here in the best interest of the child, rather than a court process, which feels like more of a direct challenge on them as parents.
I guess with a divorce and separation, as we've said, there's that added complexity of, you know, somebody being, well, both people being hurt, but your child being hurt and wanting to love and protect them, and therefore it being perceived as side-taking, even when you're trying to walk a very neutral line. What advice or tips do you give grandparents in that scenario? You've talked about trying to stay neutral. What does that mean on a practical level? What are you telling them to do or not do?
I think a grandparent needs to understand, first of all, what their role as a grandparent is, and that some grandparents haven't quite got to that place. And for me, a grandparent is there as a supporting role, to support as and when required. So that starts even before separation and divorce. So, you know, that's something happens, you know, that's somewhere you need to learn how to be a grandparent, actually. And I think there isn't an easy answer to any of this, as you all know. But I think the difficulty is, of course, always, it's obviously one of your children that is suffering, as you rightly say. And it's very easy to say, well, the fault's always on somebody, you know, the other party. But somehow you have to put those feelings to one side, because actually everybody's suffering. Absolutely everybody is suffering, whether it's right or wrong, you know, whichever way you want to look at it. But it is about, I keep really saying the same thing, that it's about the children. Whatever we might feel about an individual parent, that child is half of that parent. So by degrading that parent or bad-mouthing that parent, actually you're doing that to the child themselves. So I think we all have to be very careful about the language we use and what we say to the children, and think about it really carefully.
And Anthony, what about when parents meet new partners and you've got the blended family situation, and then you're faced potentially as a grandparent with an unrelated child being part of your grandparenting responsibilities almost, aren't you? Because you've got, you know, and you've got the other person's children in with your grandchildren, and perhaps they're all coming to visit all at the same time, and you've got a much sort of broader kind of group of children, grandchildren all of a sudden, some of whom aren't technically your grandchildren, but you might want to make them feel like they are your grandchildren. So how does that all work? It seems to get very complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm from a blended family myself, so I've been in that situation. And I think it's tricky as well with children, because of course children have that different level of understanding too. So I can remember, for example, with my grandmother, she would treat me, my half siblings, my step siblings, all exactly the same, which I think is a really nice, fair way of going about it. But also, you know, I can remember thinking as a kid, how come they're getting the same Christmas present as me? Like, I'm the real grandchild here. So, you know, you've always got those different challenges and those different dynamics. I don't think there's an easy solution. But what I would say is trying to treat those children fairly and evenly, you know, as much as possible, because you know, on the other side of things as well, with my stepmom and going to her parents' house, they were always very lovely to me, very welcoming. But you do feel as a child like you are a bit of an outsider in that situation. And so I think it's just being mindful of that. I think it's just being aware that it is a bit complicated.
Should we be talking to children about this kind of stuff then? So is it better to acknowledge that it might feel strange or different, and to have an open conversation about it? Or is that just too much for a child?
I think doing it in an age-appropriate way is is really good because you can't control those situations. You don't know how it's going to be, but I think it's encouraging the child that it's okay for them to talk about it and just trying to understand how they feel about it as well, so that, you know, if they're not feeling great about it, that's a conversation that could be had about what might look different next time too. But yeah, I certainly think these are all situations where children, regardless of their age, are aware to some extent of what is happening and what that difference is. So I think not talking to them about it doesn't give them the opportunity to speak. So doing so in an age-appropriate way, incredibly important in my opinion.
And Jane, I don't want to, you know, pry too deeply into your own sort of individual situation, but are you now at this stage, now you're sort of re-engaged and you're reunited with your grandchild, do you have conversations about what has happened, or is it too sensitive to go there at this stage?
No, I don't, unless I'm asked. So again, you know, as I said earlier on about being led by the children, that's what I mean. And so if my granddaughter asks me a very pertinent question about the breakup or the situation before the estrangement, I'll give her an honest answer from my point of view. But I absolutely haven't been forthcoming in it. And it's a danger for grandparents, that, actually, because very often grandparents will feel, if you like, the injustice of not being able to put, if you like, their side of the story. And that's a very difficult place to be, because actually, again, that's nothing to do with the children. That's a problem that you've had with an adult. It isn't about the relationship with the child at all. So again, it's being very, very mindful about what you say and the effect that may have on the child themselves, however old they are, really. Because, I mean, some of the children have got questions that they want answered, and clearly we must give them the answers if they ask. But the past has been and gone. I can't get those 11 years back. Whatever I do, I've lost them. But actually, my granddaughter has still lived her life through those 11 years as we have lived our lives through those 11 years. And what matters now is the here and now and where we go in the future.
Yeah, because I guess the danger as a grandparent as well is that you can have a perfectly reasonable conversation with your grandchild. They, depending on their age and stage, they may interpret it differently. They may report it back in a way that isn't quite reflective of the intent of the conversation. And then you can potentially, I guess, go back to square one if the parent takes offence or umbrage at whatever's been said or whatever they think has been said. Then it undoes all the good work. So it feels like it's a bit of a tightrope that you're walking. We've seen such a shift in parents' willingness to sit down and talk about, you know, what's right for children when relationships break down. We've seen so many more people abandoning hostile processes like courts and solicitors in favour of alternative resolutions and working outside of the court system. Do you think this is an area where there's some real fertile ground here to actually try and get, you know, a family together to talk about the grandparenting relationship?
Absolutely. And it's an area that I have had a lot of experience with back in New Zealand, because grandparents, the law's a bit different, the government funding's a bit different. There weren't as many barriers to grandparents being able to be involved in those processes. And we would see that quite often, whether it was one of the grandparents and one of the parents, whether it was all of the grandparents and all of the parents. And it helps for a more well-rounded conversation around how can we best help our children and our grandchildren through this really difficult time in their lives. So I think it's something that should be looked into really early on in a divorce and separation as well. And not to say necessarily a formal process like mediation, but just reaching out if it's your child's ex-partner to say, look, I'm here to support you and my grandchild, of course, in any way that I can, to just really try and keep that connection there, or just to sort of reach out so that that conflict doesn't then impact your relationship with your grandchild as well. But I definitely think that it's something we could be focusing a lot more on here.
I like that idea, that early reaching out before it's all gone catastrophic, but in those early moments of the breakdown in the relationship, reaching out to the partner of your child and almost positioning yourself as a support and offering your services as a support and as a person who will look out for the child in the relationship. That sounds like a really positive way of moving this whole thing forward. It really genuinely does.
Well, I think when a relationship breaks down, sometimes people are just presumptive that that relationship's going to break down with the entire family. And sometimes it's a little bit difficult for them going through a separation to reach out to their mother-in-law or their father-in-law. So sometimes it would be worthwhile if that contact came in the other direction to say, look, I'm here for you as well. You're still the parent of my grandchild. And I want to make sure that I can support you, you know, you both through this difficult time too.
And on that note, I think we'll have to wrap it up. I'm just very conscious of time. Jane, where can people find out about the support that you can offer?
If grandparents like to go into the search engine and just put Bristol Grandparent Support Group in, it will come up with our website. And we have a helpline as well, so they're welcome to give us a ring anytime they want to. If we aren't about to answer them, we get back to them as soon as we can.
And do they have to live in Bristol? Is it a Southwest thing? Or?
No, we support grandparents right across the UK and beyond.
Okay, brilliant. And Anthony, if people want some help in setting up some of those kind of facilitated conversations, where can they find some help?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can contact us at Amicable on our website, amicable.co.uk. And we offer free initial 15-minute consultations. So we'd love to have a chat with anyone who thinks that this might be something worth looking into for them.
Brilliant. It's been a really fascinating conversation. Thank you very much indeed for sharing your story, Jane, and for your expertise as well, and to you, Anthony, as well. Thanks very much. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can find out more about new podcast episodes by subscribing for updates and visiting thedivorcepodcast.com or on your favorite listening platform. And you can find out more about Amicable and me. I'm at Kate_Daly on X, as it is now known. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me, and thank you, everybody, for listening.